Boom. Take that. Back.
What's up?
Back in the saddle.
Yeah.
We're just talking about Aerosmith, so that kind of came to my mind. Here we are.
Welcome.
It's the Nostra Thomas Show with my co-host, Gary James.
And,
it's good, always good to see you, bro. And I, you know, people got to realize I probably talk to you almost every day. So it's not like we just pop on together. Hey, let's do the show.
Takes
a lot of stuff. Just a little quick thing here. I want to talk about my son, Tommy. Just if you're out there, just say a little prayer. He's dealing with a nerve issue that's got him really freaked out. His arm will just start pop, like shaking out of nowhere. Or his thumb will just start doing this, or like you could see is like something. And to watch a, you know, because if you remember back in the show days, he was always my concert buddy. He's always right by my side, and you know, and it just breaks my heart to see him, you know, sitting there, you know, with tears in his eyes and just looking for me to fix something that I can't. The first time in my life, I can't fix it. I don't know what to do with it. You know,
right.
So he's
doing the right thing by Monday. You're doing the right thing.
He's going in Cleveland Clinic Monday, and he's not leaving until we know what it is. Stay there till it's done, because this coming, going, not knowing, all the tests come back negative isn't helping anything. It's just making it worse.
Right. Well, they're supposed to be the best up there, so hopefully they can get to the bottom of it.
And Anthony Cafaro hooked him up with probably the best, so thank God for him and his help, too. So
absolutely.
You know what? I had a wide range of stuff. I want to kick off a little bit of, I think I'm going to start with, some funny stuff. Facebook etiquette. If you're watching this show, first of all, look at Gary's shirt. I wish I had that. Wish I came up with that first, and I did not.
I had a fan get me a shirt, because I am a repeat offender for my ninth conviction. I'm in Facebook jail again. And trust me, I'm not happy about it this time.
Well, you actually pulled off like an Alcatraz breakout the other day. You just
I did. I don't know how. I'm like, man, I'm out. I don't even know how I'm out.
Man, you beat the Rock. Only two other people beat the Rock like that. So, yeah, all of a sudden you just busted free.
The bastard got me again.
I, on the other hand, have the restrictive title where I have the ankle bracelet on and I get zapped every time, and like two people can see my shit. So that's where I'm at with it. But I want to talk about some Facebook etiquette. And it really intrigues me. Every now and then I'll write about it. Okay, let me give an example. Okay, so I flip down, I see somebody's kid's birthday or some accomplishment, I like it, say something. Or, you know, I put something on about my son. People go by, everybody interacts. I am fascinated with the people that put something. Here I am, folks. I'm putting this on. And it's, you guys have all been sitting here waiting for me to do this. Ain't been on Facebook. Ain't talked about nothing until they either bragging about something or something. And then people write all these things and they don't even go back and answer them. So
yeah,
really.
So, like, I did a thing today, and like they bought a new Jeep.
But you're that sure that people are so fascinated with you that the mere mention of what they did, and you're just supposed to go, wow, and then you don't get any. Hey, I'm praying for you. Blah, blah, blah. You don't even go back and say, you know, or when they put a selfie on, people are going, hey, you look great. You don't even have. Cares. I know I look great. I wouldn't have put the picture on there. So sometimes I have written like pastors, some local celebrities. I've written them notes. Dude, you are a pastor. You're writing stuff about something. People are writing underneath there and you don't even go back and acknowledge them. How narcissistic is that, really?
Yeah, it's like they're just sitting there waiting for the comments.
So I just try to tell people, it really is a bad look, and you probably either need to stay off of it, or either get on there and do interaction with people. Like, I love these local 27 people. Like, you guys are a celebrity working for Youngstown TV. Wow. Well, can't wait. Sitting there all day going, when are they going to post a picture?
Well, I also got a bone to pick with you because you yell at me. You change your profile picture twice a week. What I do is...
But you have a good one, and then you change it like a day later.
Well, people, they'll come out to our shows. They'll shoot pictures or live shots. So I put it up there showing that I'm using it, basically. Like, you sent me a picture. I appreciate it. Nice shot. So I'll throw it up with my profile. And then later on, somebody will send me another one. So I'll take that one
down. That's really good. That's cool, then, because I'm thinking, wow, that was a good one, Gary. And all of a sudden, it changed it. Hey, go back to that last one. That last one was good. So I'm like, why does it keep changing it? That last one was good.
Well, that's why I do it. I mean, now the background part, like where I got my car or stuff like that, I do that. But the actual profile picture, I just, you know, people send me different live shots and I'll throw it up there. And just to kind of show them that I acknowledged it. I got the picture. Thanks. I appreciate it.
Well, after I write these people, now get a load of these responses when I've written to people to tell them about it. Oh, I rarely get on Facebook. Okay, that just made it worse. So you only get on to show yourself a selfie or something, and then I just get back off. Oh, well, that makes it all a lot better, then. You're really worse than I thought. Okay, so I got that off my chest. I got another one, bro. We were talking about this, and I did a little sneak on Facebook on who I was talking about that ripped off my son on a car deal. And ripped off a friend of mine after the wedding. He's supposed to pay. No, he's supposed to pay, and just never paid him like $78,000. But you know what? When you can, I've done enough stuff wrong. I need second chances. I thought about this and I thought, you know what? Do I want to put myself in a spot that I don't want to be in? Things that I might have done. Okay. Right. But when you steal money from a kid and worked for $1,300 and you don't give them the car or the money back, that's grounds for getting your butt kicked all over the street. But
yeah, how many other people do you do it to?
Yeah. So I couldn't do that because when I went over to confront, they called the police.
Imagine that.
And told me if I came back, blah, blah, blah. Okay. So, but the problem is this person parades around like he is the Gandhi. Okay. And that's what makes it so hard not to say anything. I've taken, bro, he has made so much money in my stuff, events and things. And
it's a shame. Are we going to make him famous?
He sells,
make me famous.
He sells barbecue chicken.
My gosh. I know who you're talking about. I know who you're talking about. Yeah.
And we'll leave it at that.
Yeah. Okay.
I'll talk about that later. I'll talk to you about that when I'm off the air and I can say what I really want to say. Now,
right.
And here's the other thing. I've given him 100 chances just to start doing something. Just a little bit at a time. Somebody, because it wasn't actually him. It was somebody else in his family. So he told me he was going to take care of it because and nobody's ever done anything. And he's had plenty of time to at least, you know. Yes, Rosie, I do need to smack him in front of them. I was thinking more of a punch than a smack. In fact, I seen him at Home Depot and I go, do yourself a favor and turn around and go the other way.
You should have said, do yourself a favor, open the door and let him in.
Oh, my God. By the way, I got another one because I did this on Ron Verb. Hey, do you remember, and this is going to go right into something else because there's another thing bugging me. But the
I like segues.
The politician thing. Do you remember when we had the Ohio lottery in Eastwood Mall? Actually, a live show. Do you remember that?
I'm not sure.
It was huge. They were doing them all around the state. So I started working on getting it. And it took a lot of work, man, getting these people focused because, you know, you're talking about another government agency. But so I'm trying to get some help off local politicians. And the only one that really helped me was Dan Palifka. Okay. And Dan actually, it took a lot of lunches for a lot of overweight people to get this done. I'll leave it at that. They love them lunches, man. Another lunch. Okay. Chocolate milkshake. Okay. But they finally said, okay. And when the show came, it was hugely successful. And I had to sit down in there in the front row with my Vince and let seven politicians act like they had something to do with it.
That's wrong right there.
I'm sitting there watching all these guys waving to the crowd. You didn't do one thing. You didn't do one. And Anthony would say, just let them do that. That's what they do. And I just finally got to a point. Like, remember I brought the dinosaur show to the expo. I brought like stuff from out of state in. And every time it was something successful, like that Loggers Expo brought in all kind of this, all of a sudden up. The politicians showing up, cutting ribbons, doing one damn thing.
And here's the thing. Here's the thing, since you brought up that nasty P word. I don't have really anything against politicians until just recently. Like, it's like, I know there's good ones. But the bad ones are giving the good ones a bad name. I can't even, I'm going to the voting booth for sure, but I don't want to. I don't even want to give them my time. But like I said, the bad ones are ruining it for the good ones. That's why I think the bad ones need to be eliminated. They need to get out of there because it's going to ruin. Everybody's starting to feel that way too. It's the people I talk to.
It is actually it's really hard to even identify a good one. I'm having a hard time, really. I am.
Because I know some politicians that I think are doing a good job, but you hear other people are like, oh, I don't like him or I don't like her because of this or because of that. It's like, well, I never heard that or I never. It's really screwed up, man. Today's really screwed up.
It's really because if you act, because here's what Tim Ryan's trying to do. Tim Ryan's trying to get away from Tim Ryan. He's now running these cheesy ads about against China now, and he's not putting himself really with the people that he's aligned himself with. All of a sudden, he's like this independent guy, like out there, not really. You are a piece of garbage. You went along with all this crap that's going on. Don't come out here now and act like you're some different politician. You haven't done one thing in 20 years. Hasn't done anything. How do you run on it?
The thing is, like, I can't say I never liked the guy, because when he first was around years ago, I thought he talked good. Mm-hmm. Just like Obama. Obama was a good talker at first, you know. But then when you start hearing and seeing and witnessing things, you're just like, man, and I'm sure that happens to a lot of people and a lot of people we elect. You know, you realize later, man, maybe that wasn't the right decision. You know, but
almost every time.
It's horrible, though. It shouldn't be that way. I mean, when you're as a candidate and you've got your mind set on this candidate, you think you're making the right decision. God, just go with it and just make sure that they do what they say they're going to do. That's 90% of the problem. They don't ever do what they say they're going to do.
And
then we look like the doofus for voting for these people.
But see, everybody gets up in arms, but Tim Ryan's won like how many times on nothing. So why should he change that? He's pretty much kicked sand in our face for 20 years. So
I kind of don't even know how he won, because everybody I talk to,
like,
he's got to know.
Because they don't know what they're doing. Because the same people that aren't paying attention just see, oh, Tim Ryan, Democrat, and that's it. They don't look past that. The D's first, and that's the end of it.
It's really screwed up. It's screwed up now, Thomas. I'm telling you.
It really is.
30 years ago, I think it was a little different. Even though
there was a lot different.
BS going on back then, too, I bet. Just we weren't aware of it.
Hey, I want to just get into some of... if you wanted to talk about, I want to talk about some band stuff in that in a minute, but I want to go back through a lot of my events, like keep these big folders kind of back before we put everything on a computer. Just kept these huge binders. And I'm going through because, you know, I have had really a hard time with some of these people that I made who they are today. And yes, Clay.
Yes, and Clay.
Yes. I made them when they were doing nothing, made them food people, security people, other promoters, vendors, floor cleaners, cleanup crew, took care of them for 20 some years. They made a ton of money. They don't have a clue what a show from build up from start to finish, from laying down plywood to starting a stage, to doing everything that goes around it, the fence. Every time we did a show, we had to actually put together the show. There was no building sitting there. I had to redo it from start to finish.
Yeah, it was an empty lot. Yep.
And then when the Expo Center became the hotel and we didn't have the event center and that, and then Covelli was starting and their thing, and Eric, who I worked together with some shows, and all of a sudden I'm like, hey, I got all this experience. I actually applied for the Youngstown events director, and Tito Brown gave it to some guy that ran the flea market. All I'm saying is, this is the only area ever where all of the shows that I had in my book and all the things that nobody cared. Yeah, Tom can't help us now, so heck with him. But all the times I took care of everybody, so now I'm like, hey, maybe we could do some shows together. Well, I don't know. Now all of a sudden I'm like, you got nobody. Only in this area would you not want all the stuff that I could just give you. I'm not going to get into it, but you know what I mean.
Just the knowledge alone that you have by starting that stuff is worth its weight in gold to somebody that's never done it.
And who wouldn't want me just hanging around, like giving you a little, hey, that beer stands a little too far from the crowd. They're not going to walk that far. I know these little things that make a difference. And also, like some of the bulk of the sales, like concerts and that, or shows, everybody kind of give up on the last day, the walk-up crowd. That last 200-300 tickets makes or breaks the show. And you just got to keep pumping tickets, trying to keep up to the last door and right up to the last day, right up to the last minute. So I just, that was really bothering me. And I ran it by you a couple of times and you gave me some pretty good advice. So going from there, I want people to know what it's like, because we talked about before the show, Aerosmith, Deep Purple, a lot of these bands that, you know, doing great, all of a sudden they disappear. All of a sudden there's all these fighting and stuff. People are like, how could you blow something that good? The Police, I could go on and on and on. But Gary, I think your insight on the stress of being with a group of guys, artists, not the normal kind. You're talking about people with a different kind of way than most people are. And everybody has their ideas, and there's a lot of stress that goes with a group of guys. It's not like a baseball team. It's a totally different thing. So I thought maybe you could talk about that.
Well, you know, as I told you earlier, I watched a documentary on Hulu about Kiss, and us being the general public and the purchasers of we purchased their albums or what. Well, I wasn't a real big Kiss fan, don't get me wrong, but I did when I was younger.
No, I wasn't either.
But so we're on the outside looking in, and all we see is fame and fortune, flames, autographs, girls, and that's fine. But when I watched this documentary, I really sat there and looked at Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley. They're sitting in his house on the couch just talking, and they're both in their 70s. You know, Gene Simmons is 72 and Paul Stanley is 70.
That's so weird.
But the stuff that they had to endure between Peter Criss and Ace Frehley, they got so good, so big, like the drugs, the drinking started. And Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley don't drink, smoke, or do drugs ever. And they had to tell him, listen, you guys got to quit doing this, blah, blah, blah. Well, they end up having to get him out of the band because of it. And then finally, they talked and they wanted to bring him back and do a world tour of the four original members of Kiss. And they said, but it's going to be on our terms. You can do Japanese, Tokyo tour, all these tours. You'll make $1 million. Are you in? He goes, no, I want to make what you want to make. Peter Criss said that to Paul Stanley. He goes, I want to make what you want to make. He goes, well, it looks like you're not doing the tour. Because they were more involved with, I think, the stardom the starstruck, the drinking, the partying, and it totally didn't ruin Gene or Paul. They stuck to their guns. They went through like three or four drummers. You know, Eric mm-hmm. Carr passed away from cancer. great drummer, rest his soul. He was a young guy when he died. Then they got Eric Singer, and then they went through three or four guitar players. But they still held it together. And it's just, it's crazy. When you know, the stuff we did was totally way different level than, of course, a national level. I mean, we toured the Midwest, the East Coast. We got a taste of it, but we didn't have the accommodations they did, you know.
Right. But that makes it even harder.
Yes, it was very hard. I mean, I came home, I weighed 143 pounds. I was like, Mom, I got abs. She goes, you look sick. So, but when you learn this, and not just Kiss, I mean, probably all the major bands, Aerosmith's another one. They had drug-inflicted pain in that band. And it was, and they overcame it. Now, that was one band that's been around for what, almost 50 years?
Yep.
48 years. They overcame it, and they got the original members, and they're still doing it so far.
And they're still doing, and they had Rocks and then Draw the Line, and then they're like blowing up and then all of a sudden disappear. But you, and then when you're back in those days, you didn't have all this information, so you're just like, what the heck happened to them? Unless you're buying like a Rolling Stone magazine, you don't even know. And then all of a sudden I'm sitting at Color Time one day, and here I see the video, let the music do the talking, dude looks like a lady. All of a sudden they're back from the dead.
Yeah.
Hugely.
I think what happens a lot too, once you make it to that level, I don't think that you really appreciate what you've done and what this company's done for you, the record companies. Now, I'm not saying record companies are beautiful and they're perfect, because they're not. They're shysters, but they got to get their money first. But they put,
right.
Long story short, when Kiss got rid of their old manager, they took on Doc McGee, who managed Motley Crue, Bon Jovi, couple other big bands. So as Doc McGee, Paul Stanley, Gene Simmons says, well, we want to play like, you know, some arenas, or, you know, like Cavelli Center, stuff like that. Doc McGee says, no, you're going to play stadiums. You're going to go big, or you're not going to do this. They played Detroit Stadium. They sold it out in 4 hours. So, but I don't think, you know, Paul and Gene talk like they were thankful for everything they accomplished throughout their careers. Even us guys from Lazarus and, you know, my band now, Northern Whiskey. I mean, we get these club owners give us the opportunity to come and put our show in there, and we bring a nice crowd for them. I mean, we're thankful for that. You know, we're like, mm-hmm. you know, we make decent money. It's not about the money, but let me tell you, it does help after you've been doing it so long and you spend money on equipment. But I think a lot of
these cheap about it.
Like your Skid Rows and those bands from the 80s.
Rap.
Like do they really appreciate what they, I mean, yes, their music was good and us fans appreciate it, but are they really thankful that they even had that chance to be graced with that type of, you know what I mean? It's just hard. And I think they don't, because that's when the drugs come in, because they don't care. They're going to live like a rock star. This is, hey, I'm Stephen Piercy from Rat. I'm going to do it. But I think the ones that stay level headed, like Gene and Paul did, didn't let the drugs take over them. They're still thankful to this day in their 70s for everything they accomplished. And they worked their tails off. Trust me, that documentary is about 3.5 hours long, and it was awesome.
Well, it's really funny because I think that there's a lot of look back on professional sports and the music industry. You know, does Steven Tyler look back and think, gosh, man, I blew 8-9 years being out of my mind, and you know, right. thinking back, you know what I mean? Or just like,
turn back.
Who would ever have guessed that Duran had all these same issues going on? Now, that's a band you're looking at thinking, I really got a lot of talent, kind of nicely dressed, cool dude. They're having the same daggone thing, the partying, the craziness, and the thing. It's just like comes with it. It does.
On the local level of it, or even when we were like considered a regional level, like you guys, Caferos, you, Cornell, Viking, you know, Fast Freddy, Casey, all them people that helped us, man, we were thankful for that. They used to bring us in the studio up in Boardman, put us right on the air, which nobody does that anymore.
No,
they don't do it. They put us right on the air and talk to us, ask about our shows coming up, blah, 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 just for a short plug. Didn't charge us a dime, you know, and we were thankful for that big time, because that's, it's just, I don't think a lot of people, a lot of musicians, I don't really, I mean, we know how much work we put into it, but we got to be thankful that these people are given that opportunity, letting us bring our show to them and make them money, you know, pack their place. But when you watch these documentaries, Thomas, I'm telling you, it's crazy. It's like, wow, man, how could they be so ungrateful? Like, this smashing shit in hotel rooms. Like, they don't care.
What,
it's just like,
yeah, what is that about? That always
TVs out the window.
I never thought about doing that.
No, I know.
I mean, I just like, but it really intrigues me because a lot of you start looking up how the bands got together. Who did what? Who was the guy that wrote the songs? I mean, there's just so much background on some of these really famous. But I wanted to give you, do you remember this little brawl that's going on between the Rolling Stones and Beatles? Now, listen, I particularly did not like the Beatles.
This day? Is it going
on? It's going on still, yeah. This. Now, here's the problem. I liked the Beatles separately. Just like I liked Robert Plant after Led Zeppelin. I liked him better after he left them. I really liked Paul McCartney alone. I liked George Harrison. And I liked the part of the Wilburys. I liked them all. I even liked John Lennon. I mean, so actually, the Rolling Stones are acting like they were the much bigger band and blah, blah, blah. And my answer to that is, has any of the Rolling Stones broke off and been hugely successful like all the Beatles were? No.
I know your answer. I'm gonna have to research that because I don't know. Did Mick Jagger do a solo project at one time?
Yeah, but the rest of the band,
they didn't do nothing.
You got.
I wasn't never really that big of a Stones fan either.
But you know that what's his name, Keith? But he didn't go out and have his own a solo career. Even what's the drummer for the Beatles? What the heck? What's his name? Ringo Starr. He had a bunch of hits.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, no way Rolling Stones are you even in the same game as each guy going out and carving out their own solo career. It doesn't happen often.
Kiss even did that.
Yeah, they did. I remember
that. You know what? Gene Simmons says on this interview last night, he goes, we came down to a point where maybe we need to get away from each other for a while. Why don't we all just go do our own solo stuff, put out an album, and then we'll hash things out after that and get back. That's when Ace really had Back in the New York Groove. And, you know that was probably the only one I listened to. I think Ace Frehley's album was probably the most popular.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
I think Peter Chris did Hard Luck Woman, I think, and Beth on his, but I never really listened to the other ones. But they broke off and did their own solo thing. And I think that gave them room to breathe and kind of get rid of the hotheadedness or whatever.
And you know, I was a kind of a marginal fan of Deep Purple in the 70s. And
I like Deep
Purple. And Richie Blackmore, they went through how many singers? Coverdale, they went through all these.
Knocking at Your Back Door.
And then when The Perfect Stranger came out in 1985, I think, I remember riding down the road and the Perfect Stranger song come on, and I turn it up. Wait a minute, that sounds a lot like a Deep
Purple. Oh, yeah, that one goes. Yeah, that's a cool song.
I thought that was like, and you turned that up, and then when me and Dominic went and saw him at Blossom, we were so excited. We kind of got hung up. I was walking through Blossom's lot, and they were playing Perfect Stranger, and the ground was shaking. It was like, oh, my gosh, I'm missing the daggone song I want to see. Yeah, but
you're probably like, oh, hold on, I'm gone.
But they were so... They were so loud. I mean, they set the record. I think they have the all-time record for the loudest band. So, I mean, they were, when that ground's shaking, boy, you're playing.
And you know, another thing too, now you brought up Deep Purple. You don't hear nobody around here playing that stuff.
Yeah, why?
That was some of the best rock. That was good. They were like, well, was in the early 80s. That's considered classic rock now. I don't care. It was good, hard rock and music.
Really hard.
How about Radar Love?
Yeah, nobody. Who does that?
Nobody.
Nobody does that. And I was teasing Chuck Alberini one time. I said, hey, I go up there and sing. And Albert, I go, can we do Sultan's Swing? And he goes, are you understanding the guitar part for that song? He goes, I can't play that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
a place. Yeah, he goes, that guitar player Doppler is unbelievable because we're not doing that song.
My band right now, we're in the midst of learning some new stuff because the country thing's kind of fading around here.
Yeah, I noticed that.
We're trying to bring in some more rock, and we're in the mix of trying to figure out what to start learning. Our keyboard player's moving to Florida, but we do have three other keyboards that we're going to interview coming up here. But
why don't you do that obscure stuff that you're talking about? I mean, everybody plays the same. If I go out, I see the same, it's the same bucket list of songs that, everybody.
I know. But,
and it's just like,
and that's what I try to steer away from. I told the guys before, and they agreed. I said, I don't want to do all the same songs that all these other bands around here are doing. It's the same classic songs.
Yeah.
And Eddie Money, take me home tonight. I know. And I like Eddie Money, but I don't want to do it. So
why don't somebody do like and you know what? I do really do a really good Billy Idol. Somebody needs to do like a,
don't say White Wedding. I'll stab you in the retina.
No, after that. When he did You Don't Need a Gun, and then he did Rebel Yell, those type. Those were like,
we used to really, do that one.
That was a good, Rebel that's Yell. A, yeah. Something just a little off the dip, like maybe a little $1 billion babies from Alice Cooper or something.
Oh, that'd be cool. Yeah. Of course, nowadays too, when, when we'll be at Upper Creek a couple days this summer, but those places like to dance. So we've got to kind of be cheesy.
You're right. It's not a concert. You're right. You got to be cheesy on some of the stuff
to keep it danceable. Because like as soon as we go into the Doobie Brothers, I still think that's our hit songs when we play live. Because my singer, I'm so screwed up. My drummer Carl, he has such an amazing voice. He can sing that stuff to a T. As soon as we start playing it, people are like, "Man, I thought the jukebox was on." I'm like, "Okay."
That's a sign of a good band.
We always get our attention when we start doing that stuff, or Journey. He can nail Journey too.
Oh. So
we got to try to keep it.
That's not easy.
No, it's not. Some of the parts you don't even attempt because it's so high.
Steve, how about how about Heaven Knows from like Robert Plant's his solo stuff is really cool, man. It's got some really good bluesy stuff.
That was a cool album. I remember that album. That was cool.
And Stan, when his first one that he came out with, Burning Down One Side, and it was a lot of Zeppelin kind of sound to that one, which I really liked. And then he went off into this Honey Drippers and some pulley cool stuff he was doing.
We try to ask the people too, like on our Northern Whiskey page on Facebook. But since I've been in jail, I can't even activate that one now. But so we ask people, either send us a message on Messenger. If there's certain things you want to hear, I like to hear ideas from the people out there, because if they're the ones come out to see us, that matters. That matters a lot. You can't always play just what you want to play. You got to play what the people want. So if anybody out there knows of any good songs, you send it to Gary James.
That's what we want to see, man. I want to hear it. You know what? I think we're going to have to start doing some giveaways or something.
Yeah, we can do that.
I think that'd be cool. Like if you get people really interested, maybe have them guess how many pennies are in a jar or something. I don't know, but keep people interested when they could win something.
Yeah, we can do that. We need to get some Not for Thomas shirts.
That's what we need to do. And I've got a bunch of music memorabilia that, listen, I have produced a ton of signed stuff. And maybe I'll start giving away the stuff I don't really want, It's like some of the stuff don't mean nothing to me.
Listen, there's some stuff that, you know, even I have stuff. There's stuff that people would love, you know, that I don't know.
I had a couple of things, man, that ZZ Top signed that this guy was just trying to buy. And I had to, because they're going to no longer be them, I decided not to sell some of that. And then I had some Skinner stuff. And
are they going to do anything else?
I don't know. That's just sad. But, and you know what's really sad about this whole thing is I think the last real true band ended like in the 90s, really. I mean, as far as a band coming out, or maybe it was Guns N' Roses. What was the last rock band that actually was like the 70s or 80s kind of rock band? It hasn't been one in a long time now. So
no,
these 70-year-old guys, they still got to pay. You still got to pay them big money, man, because they don't have anything else. They don't have it.
I know. We just did a country guy at Packer Music Hall. Josh Turner was excellent. He's not older. He's not really new. He's been around for a while.
Been around a while, but not. Yeah.
No, he's not like a legend. Yeah.
How'd that show do?
It did really good. It did. I'd probably say it was 3/4 of the way full.
Wow, on a weekend.
He had some two of the closest sections up top next to the stage. We kept those closed. And then there was some empty seats up top around the bottom. But the floor and everything he did good. It was a good show.
That's good. What's next? I can't remember.
I'm not sure. I was supposed to do Trace Atkins.
Yeah.
This past Monday, and I come home from work and my electricity was out at my house. So
wow.
It didn't come on until almost 7 o'clock. I was supposed to be down there at 5:30. And I kept calling the guys. I said, listen, I go, as soon as it come on, man, I can suit up and be down. And then it came back on like 6:50 or something like that. And I couldn't leave just because my sump pump in my basement, if it don't kick on.
Yeah, bro, it's champion.
We had a storm coming. I got to go to my father-in-law's and get his generator just to. But so.
Well, I lived through that.
That was a good show. That was a really good show.
That, I'll tell you what, that Champion low-line area, when I was on 305, right down the road from where you live.
Yep.
Well, my yard would fill up all the way almost to. And the day that my sump pump quit working, I walked down and I fell into the water like it was over my head.
I remember you telling me that.
Awful. One of the worst moments of my life. I can't. I mean, when I start thinking about it, I get all sewer water.
I got about 4 or 5 inches one time, and only because my pump burned up. But
how about I had a. Oh my God, I'm not going to tell those stories, but I had a roofer half-assed do my house, and I'm laying in bed on the night before Easter, and it's pouring down rain. And I'm actually dreaming of somebody pounding on the door in my dream. I wake up. That's not what it was. The water was coming in so hard that it was hitting the floor and making that kind of noise.
Oh my God.
Never covered up the seams. It was just pouring into the house. Through the wood floors and right to the basement.
Did it ruin your drywall?
Oh yeah, it was a disaster. We're just sitting there one day in the wall, the whole ceiling caved in, eating black. What are you doing? Nothing, honey. What kind of your day like? Just all fell down. Okay, well that's a problem. You just don't know how bad it is until.
Yeah, water damage is the worst, man. It is,
and you don't know how bad it is. You know, unless you have somebody really go look and see.
Yeah, I did home inspections. You know, I went to school for property management and stuff, and I did home inspections before. And they teach you to look in the rafters first. If you see where water was running, follow it, because it ain't jump and say it's running down that rafter and running down through an eave and maybe into the corner of a living room. I mean, it's coming. True.
But hey, I want to end this. I want to end this show with a little. Now you know that roofer thing comes with another little. You think I just sat there and let that happen?
No.
I'm not kidding you, Gary. You know when your adrenaline is so crazy? Like, I was so, like, freaked out that when I went out, I grabbed myself and pulled myself up on the roof with some plastic. Now, couldn't have done that a million other times. But because you're all freaked out, I just pulled myself right up there. But I also parked down the road from the roofer and walked up to his house in a snow, a little bit of snow, a little bit like a crazed mental patient, breathing heavy. I'm getting closer.
The abominable snowman.
And I'm knocking on the door. He comes out like that. I knocked the screen door into his head. And we'll leave it at that. I took him to court and won, but he didn't have any money. So, yeah, I have a $20,000 in case he ever wins the lottery or something. I can go get it.
Yeah. Okay. we're in our 50s, bro.
Yeah. I should look back into that though. He might have something I can get.
Is he a local roofer?
Yeah.
You want to make him famous?
It was a guy.
You want to make him famous?
I was a guy I tried to help, and I should have never, ever trusted him. I gave him $1,600, and he spent it all on whatever. Didn't have any money to finish.
Oh my gosh. I went through that with my first house.
So
exactly about it was people I knew. It was people I knew.
Isn't it amazing, though? You just always think somebody's going to do it the way you would do it. Like,
exactly.
Somebody, you're just, I'm giving you $1,600. I'm going to go do what I say I'm going to do. And you think everybody's going to do that. And I know my wife's like, how do you trust him? Oh, he'll never do that. How many times have I said that? Oh, he won't do that to me.
Listen, I'm just as guilty. People I know, I'm like, yeah, you got your business. I'll help you out. I need this, this, this. I pay them half up front. The other half when they're done. They won't even come back to finish. They got half the money and never came back. I was like, no more, excuse me. I was like, no more. Just, I ain't doing it again.
You know what? And people always say, very few times, and it's happened though, I've had somebody like Randy Wilson come over and build me a deck out of, you got to be kidding me. But when it's too good to be true, or you get what you pay for most of the time, it's the truth.
Yes.
How many times do I got to get my ass kicked?
Get it handed to you.
Everybody, I told you so. Don't even start.
So I think, of course, we'll talk off air too, but I think maybe we should do that. Maybe we'll come up with a trivia because we do have some people that are writing in. I noticed Clay and a couple other people writing in. Maybe we'll throw some stuff out there and we'll you and I'll get together and just do some giveaways.
And here's what we're going to do, because my schedule is clear next week. We are going to the studio, and we're going to do it from the studio, the call-ins and all that. We're going to do it. That's what we're doing next week. So, people, just count on. I don't have any.
Next Thursday?
Yeah, I don't have any meetings or any Vegas. I go to Vegas at the end of May, so I'm good next week. We could do something in the studio and have a little fun. We'll come up with
the 5th. I got a show on the 7th of May. That's my only show the whole month.
I'm going to come up with some memorabilia or something we can give away or something cool.
Yeah, we could do that. I think it'd be fun, too.
All right, Garris. Always a great time, bro.
Always.
We could talk all night long.
Yeah, we got, actually could.
But it's so funny because I noticed both of us do the start and put the brakes on.
Okay. Well, we'll do a small segment next Thursday of a band story.
Yeah,
that I got tons of them, but this will be a good one. Next Thursday we'll do a segment, and I'll
fill in
a
little bit more. I was actually gonna do what I want to do is a negotiation story. Because all these things are hilarious. Because back then, you didn't have a big company and you come in and just roll through shows. I had to go to Vegas, find, they didn't know who I was, and start all over from negotiation to ending. And they're funny. It's really funny.
We'll do that.
All right, brother.
Hey, you have a good evening.
Hey, thanks again, Joe Daniel, for everything that you do. And the Nostradamus Gary James Show out for now.
Alrighty.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.